We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to episode 582 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Hilton, and joining me today, all the way from the other part of the Barcelona internet again, but actually, I took a little venture over on your stream, so I feel like it's the same part of the internet at this point. We're sharing it. It's Hafed, better known as Barca Boy. I wish I could have had you on under better circumstances, but with El Clasico and all that post stuff, I came out with a match review like, well, by the time you hear this, like 24 hours, but like 12 hours ago, I had the match review, and yet I'm still kind of wondering what just happened, what the result is, and how long it's going to take you and I to kind of take the breath, settle in, and try to bring people back to caring and listening about this team again.
It's been crazy. I think it mainly stemmed, of course, from the PSG result. Then going to the Clásico, not only were the players' heads down, but also a lot of the fan bases as well. I don't think there's not much confidence going to that game, but I think, you know what, they performed better than I expected after, you know, a big loss and humiliation midweek. But yeah, it's, you know, our whole entire season has been on this week. It's been the biggest week, I would say, for Barcelona in a very, very long time, and we failed with flying colors.
What was your, going into the match, what was your feeling of a Barcelona result, a positive result or negative result? And then how did that change? And how did you feel about the setup where Barcelona took advantage, as they've done many times this season, honestly? So credit to Sergio Alegre, the assistant manager or assistant coach to Xavi under Oscar Hernandez, in getting more success on set pieces, with the 6-minute goal being scored just because Lunin not too great in commanding the air. They saw that, understood that, and that's just a really good ball by Rafinha to Christensen at the back post, easily out jumps Cruz, no worries about that, and Christensen gets the goal. So Barcelona up 1-0, 6 minute in. Again, how are you feeling compared to maybe your thoughts prior to the game?
I was happy that we scored, but I'm the thirsty that came, my man, is way, way too early. I mean, we got another 85 minutes of football to be played where anything can happen. I think if that goal maybe happened on the 70th minute and it makes us 1-0, mood would definitely be different for sure. But with it being early in the game, I was ecstatic that there was something to hold on to, of course, but I didn't think that at that point the lead or the win was guaranteed at that point. It was still so much of the game to be played. And again, it did come from mistakes, so it kind of came sporadically as well out of nowhere. Because you're thinking that, okay, it's both coming in the far post, Lunin will probably get a hand on it, he does it, and then it hits Christian's head and goes in. But yeah, I think there's still a lot of the game to go, so I was quite surprised we scored first, to be fair. I thought this result was going to be a draw. I think we would probably have to come back from a losing position, but the fact we got the lead was pretty cool. But of course, in the end, in hindsight, didn't really lead to much.
Well, up top, I want to say that there's going to be a lot of excuses. You and I are going to talk about all the different controversies, all the different calls. I said a lot of it on the 5 headlines that just came out, but I also want to hear your opinion and kind of what we've even learned in the last 15, 16 hours as the VAR audio came out and the referee audio came out and all that stuff. But I want to say up top that even though chronologically we're going to go through this, the end of this game, the last 15 minutes or so, Barcelona lost this match. Cancelo made some defensive mistakes. The team, they crumbled when they were up in this match 2-1. They allowed 2 goals that you cannot let in, poor defending, and Barcelona lost this game after all the controversy, after they probably should have had the game won because of what we're going to talk about, but they still lost the game. So I know it sounds like we're making a bunch of excuses and all that stuff, but we're going to be talking about what I think needs a change in the Liga moving forward. more so than I'm saying individually in this match, Barcelona were robbed or any of that stuff. Like, things did not go their way. I'm being very clear about that, but they also found a way to lose this game at the end. So there's a disclaimer up top that we're going, it's not excuses, but we're going to be talking a lot about how this game was, did not go Barcelona's way for better or worse reasons. So the first thing I want to start with is the PK. So I'm going to go in chronological order. I know the biggest call is obviously the goal line thing and the goal that the phantom goal, but when the 1-1 is scored on the PK, Vasquez, Cubarsí, he goes down. Of course, Cancelo should have just fouled him outside the box. Yes, but that's on the first mistake by Cancelo we'll talk about. That said, Cubarsí, Vasquez, was that a penalty in your mind?
It wasn't, but I can see why the referee gave it. And as soon as the referee gave it, you knew that VAR were never, ever, ever going to overturn this. And I mentioned in my live stream as well, I think personally, even the referee didn't call it, I think VAR would have gave it because, again, everything was going really wrong for Barcelona in terms of momentum and luck during that evening in Madrid. But yes, I think it's a little bit of inexperience from Cubarsí. Of course it is. Bloody hell, the guy is 17 years old, you know, starting for Barcelona away at the Santiago Bernabeu in a Clásico. But it's so, so, so soft. Again, the leg is there. Vasquez runs into it. It's a trailing leg, but Vasquez looks for it, and the leg is already, you know, planted well in advance before Vasquez makes any movement as well. By the letter of the law, it is not a penalty. But based on how the game's going, everything going quickly, the referee gives it, and never were VAR going to overturn that in a million years. But again, it is a conscious error from the referee because he let the moment dictate his decision.
Totally agree with that. That I think that because his weight was on his left foot, if he had just taken his right leg in a natural position because of how far he pushed the ball out in front of him, that right trailing leg did not need to make contact with Cubarsí's leg because he was already, that being Cubarsí, in the ground. Now, Cubarsí, because his leg was stuck out, in live time, you totally understand why the referee called that. And to your point, I also agree that VAR was never going to overturn that. And the only thing I disagree about is I think by the letter of the law, if VAR is doing their job properly, that if the referee says no call, I don't think that gets overturned because I don't think it's clear and obvious that it was a penalty and VAR wouldn't overturn that, if that makes sense. So I think if the referee doesn't give a penalty, it's not. But to your point, because he called an initial penalty, VAR did not have enough to bring that one back. But to the letter of the law, I don't think that's a penalty. I think that Vasquez, with his right leg, he's the one who initiated the contact with Cubarsí. But Cubarsí, to our point, also put himself in danger by keeping that leg out. But because he had his hands behind his back, he also needed to have that leg in that position to balance himself and to keep his balance. So again, he was already in the ground, and Vasquez is the one, I think, who looked out for the contact. But it also happens a lot. We've seen examples. Somebody on your live stream mentioned Saka against Bayern Munich. It's not the first time this happened, and it's not the last time that it's going to happen. Now, hopefully, this is the last time we've ever seen a goal line. Is it a goal? Is it not a goal in Spain? Because up top, I'll give you my opinion and throw it over to you on what you actually think of what happened here. Because I don't necessarily blame the referee or VAR, even with the audio being leaked. This is a La Liga error. How do you not have goal line technology at this point in 2024? It's an absolute joke. And the league has to take a hard look at itself and say, hey, how much is this? We need to invest in this. What else are we spending our money on? Maybe we need to invest a bit in our product because our referees have not been good enough this year. And even when our referees are good enough, we're getting let down by stuff like goal line technology. This is not the first time this has happened this season. And it's happened over the last few seasons. And it's frustrating. And I think this is a failing of the Liga more than it is even in the moment, the referee and VAR, because it was tough. There was a lot of different angles. Most of them were inconclusive. And just like the first point, if the referee calls this a goal from the jump, I don't think VAR has enough to overturn it and take it off the score sheet. I think if the referee says that was a goal over the line, or the line judge, originally, because it was a line judge when the audio came out, who said, I don't think that was over the line. So it wasn't even the head referee. It was the line judge who was, again, looking up the line, who said, I didn't think it went over. If he says differently and says, I think that was over the line, I don't think VAR overturns that and takes that goal away.
You know, it was in 2010 when Frank Lampard scored that goal against Germany that really gave the push for goal line technology to get the advancements. That was in 2010. We're now in 2024, 14 years. And, you know, the second best league right now, the best league in the world from 2010 till probably 2016-17, does not have goal line technology. It's an absolute disgrace. Of course, we were the last, I say we like I'm part of the La Liga, but La Liga were the last top five division to get VAR. We're one of the last to get the semi-automated offside. So we have all this, but yet the league don't want to invest €3.5 million to get goal line technology. And this has been a problem for a very, very long time. We've seen, Dan and I, a lot of goals where Barcelona could have gotten a goal for Barcelona, where, again, it's just hovering over the line and we get robbed. And, you know, this is a regular occurrence to us, but now that we're in 2024, it happened in a Clásico at the Bernabéu, it's finally getting the media coverage it deserves, and hopefully this will give maybe a little bit of a push for it to be invested, but I don't think it will. I think Javier Tebas is a man who's very, very stubborn. I think he'll only do things on his own doing. If he feels like it's best and it's time, he will do it, but if other people tell him to do it, I don't think he'll end up doing it. Like the fact that next season we're going to have semi-automated offsides, we're going to have VAR, we're going to have all this technology, but not goal-line technology, is beyond me. And what's worse is that there were some angles that we've seen post-game that were good enough to give the declaration on that goal. So when the goal happened, when I was watching it on ESPN, they showed about two or three different angles. And yes, from those angles, you couldn't really tell because Lunin's body is blocking the ball for the majority of the angles. But then you see angles come out afterwards from fans in the stadium and also video angles from other broadcasting at halftime showing that the ball has crossed over the line. And then when Jude Bellingham scores the winning goal in the same net where the goal line decision was, you know, in question, they have other angles of where you can clearly see the ball whether it passed or not. So the angles, what's annoying for me is that, yes, I agree with you that this is more so a Javier Tebas La Liga error than it is the referee and VAR at the time. But there were angles available. That is my issue. Again, when they're doing their dance, Bellingham and Vasquez, you can clearly see the net and you can clearly see if, you know, you put Lunin in that situation, that the ball would have clearly passed the line. I mean, the sky is blue, the grass is green. I've seen this so many times. The Madrid media will scream Negreira from the rooftop, but the reality is they're the ones that are covering up their own doings at this point.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you think of great duos, who do you think of? Jordan and Pippen or LeBron and Dwayne Wade? I mean, I talk about basketball a lot here on this podcast, but for the Barcelona version, there's Piqué and Puyol or Piqué and Mascherano, or the easy example of Xavi and Iniesta. And as you can hear from my voice, the perfect teammates aren't just professional athletes. It's cold season. I guess the flu and cold medicine, perfect teammates as well. But in this case, when it comes to growing your business, that's you and Shopify. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. To be honest, I've been doing this show long enough, and as I mentioned, it's cold and flu season. You hear it in my voice, especially during the holiday season. So whenever it comes to this business, anything that I can set up and kind of have working in the background that I know and can trust is just plugging along without my attention, those are the things that I really value at this point. So when my brain is foggy and all I can do is manage to turn on the microphone, talk to the guest, or just talk to myself and get out a piece of content, everything else, having that all automated or working in the background, that's been important to keeping me sane. And that's the thing about something like Shopify. What I do love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. So no matter how big or small, how good of a month or how bad of a month, things are just the same working in the background. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is a global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs on every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tbpod, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/tbpod now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/tbpod.
Yeah, I think there's a big difference between
I thought the most egregious actually call in this game was made was an error by the referee with Modric on Rafinha in that first half that had to be a yellow. It was a yellow. It was a yellow every day of the week. That's an issue by the referee. The referee needs to be better. And that is different, though, because that is a judgment call that when the game is over, I go, man, it's not that the referee like screwed Barcelona anything with the yellow with Modric, but I go, that's an error by the referee. That's a mistake. That needs to be a yellow. As opposed to the goal line technology, which just needs to be a fact. It just, it's black and white. There's no gray to this. There's no decision. Like with proper goal line technology that we have in other leagues that we know exist, that they could just implement, it's not a conversation point. It's just black and white. As opposed to, again, the Modric thing, where if things like that happen after a match, you go, well, you win some of those, you lose some of those. Speaking of which, the next one here, Lamine Yamal, Camavinga getting a yellow instead of the red when he pulls him down. I want to mention up top here, though, Lamine Yamal, not to say silver lining, but a positive, as Rafa had pointed out on my show before this after PSG, that Lamine Yamal was taken out in the 30th minute against PSG, and he did look like the most well-rested, most prepared player in this match. I thought he was the best player on the pitch, which is a lot to say about a kid playing in El Clasico in his first time at the Santiago Bernabeu. So I don't want to minimize that we have a 16-year-old kid that we're watching playing in the Santiago Bernabeu, who is the best player on the field, with the magnitude of the rivalry that is Barcelona-Real Madrid. So there are positives to be taken out of this game. If there's, well, really, there's only that one. So that is the positive that I'm taking.
Koundé as well. Koundé's performance was phenomenal.
And Koundé's performance as well behind him, right. Supporting him really well. To the point where I almost questioned tactically some of the other stuff that happened, that to credit Ancelotti, as I talked about in your stream, that Ancelotti did the same thing that Luis Enrique did, and I think teams are pretty much going to do the way, if they can press in this way, if they have the legs and the lines to do it, they will. But that's keep Araujo as the free man, make him beat you with his passing, which is improved, but it's still not exceptional, still not even the level of Cubarsí, who they're man-marking out, because they've already seen when teams don't man-mark Cubarsí, he makes you pay, because he's that good with the ball at his feet already, better than Araujo. And so that meant that with Araujo being the free man, Lewandowski had to drop in quite a bit deeper. Rafinha also had to drop into the port Lewandowski and play off of Lewandowski as he tried to flick on. And unlike against PSG in the first leg, Lewandowski only wins 4 of 7 aerial duels there in the first half. So it does kind of break down a little bit there. And 40% of the offensive actions in this game went to Lamine Yamal on the wing. There was an utter reliance on Lamine Yamal because Ancelotti had set up tactically and said, all right, Araujo, you beat us with the ball at your feet, or we're going to have to live with Lamine Yamal turning Camavinga inside out. And if he A, gets a red card there, or B, picks up two yellows, Ancelotti gets absolutely skinned for this game, because that could have gone, yes, the red card, but I'm saying like even two yellows. Once he picked up the first yellow, Lamine Yamal goes at him and he misplayed two balls that if he winds up getting inside shoulder on Camavinga, it's another yellow. And we're talking about an entirely different game where Ancelotti winds up being the guy that you're going to criticize for his decision making. But to go to that, back to that point about Camavinga against Lamine Yamal, do you think that was a red card offense? Do you think that Chuamani was in position as to stop the last man? Or is this just a tamer version of the Barcola Araujo where it's a red because it's the last man?
I think it's a red because it's the last man. And we've seen so much of it given this season that there was a bit of consistency in that regard. But of course, Clasico against Barcelona, it's not going to be given our way. I think Lamine Yamal already beat Camavinga for pace. He's already well advanced ahead of Chuamani. Only a weird decision from Lamine Yamal himself. Maybe he cut inside, or maybe made a different movement would have Chuamani caught up to him. But, you know, we're just outside the 6-yard, the 18-yard box as well. So it's going to be a clear goal-scoring opportunity. Whether Lamine Yamal would have scored or not, of course, only God knows at that point. But it's a clear goal-scoring opportunity. Camavinga did the smart thing and took him out from behind. It was a tactical foul, 100%. But he's clean through on goal. There's going to be a chance created, whether he shoots it wide, hits the post, saves, rebound, hits it. There's going to be something happening. So how, again, that's not a red card. That opened up the game as well. You now have Lamine Yamal running on the right-hand side with open freedom, maybe Chuamani dragging him out of position as well. So the game would have opened up way, 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 way more for Barcelona. But yet again, it's a weird decision. And certainly, like you mentioned, of course, the Modric second yellow as well. The amount of time that Lewandowski, you mentioned, he won 4 out of 7 aerial duels. With the other three, he was getting fouled and getting, you know, destroyed from behind and nothing given his way. Koundé getting a yellow card when he's arguing with Vinicius, but Vinicius is getting a yellow as well. All these little errors is what the referee did poorly in this game. And it stemmed from the Mendy Mall chance, because that happened, all those other things that I mentioned happened after that. The Modric yellow, Lewandowski, Koundé as well. I think, again, like VAR, they weren't going to come and intervene. They would be like, oh, Chuamani's just there, man. He's not enough to overturn it. Not clear and obvious error. That is a referee mistake, 100%.
Yeah, I think in live time, again, I said this on your feed too, that if I was in live time, I would have thought that Tuamani, at the speed he was going and the angle he was going, that he would have been there in time. But for that, you're right too about the VAR. The VAR didn't have enough then to overturn that either. But in hindsight,
VAR didn't even review it, by the way. Sorry to interrupt you. They didn't even look at it.
Yeah, they didn't look at it.
Which is a disgrace in itself.
Yeah, because I think that's a red card offense. Like when you, because that, especially that angle from straight away, you could see that Tuamani is feet, multiple feet behind Camavinga and Lamine Yamal. So Lamine Yamal is in on goal with that angle, and then they wind up giving that as a yellow. And, you know, as I said with the disclaimer at the top of this, it's not even one of these, because if one of these incidents doesn't go Barcelona's way, I think they still do enough in this game, and they did enough to lose it, as we're going to cap this off in the end of this game with Cancelo. But, you know, they did enough to lose this game later, but if any of these moments go their way, then they probably win this Clásico. I mean, so it's not just one of these decisions. You know, over the course of 90 minutes, I don't like to make excuses. I don't like to, you know, victim stuff or conspiracy. I know people want to say that, but no, it's not. The Liga didn't hand Real Madrid the league. But there were so many moments in this game that did not go Barcelona's way, and it's not making an excuse, but it's saying that is why Barcelona lost this match, is that every 50-50 decision just went the other way. And if they had half of these go their way, or one of these go their way, any of them go their way, then they win this match. Because they did do enough in this game to win the game, and then, again, in the last 20 minutes, they found a way to lose the game. Because Xavi even got it right, and you corrected me on your feed, so credit to you, that I thought Fermín López was really good in this game, to the point where, you know, to remind people, he has the most goals across all competitions of any Barcelona midfielder. If you want to call him a midfielder, that's fair, but he really is kind of another attacker when he comes on. But his 7 goals this season, that far exceeds. Even when he made the first team, I had said I would hope that he would contribute 3 to 5. So for him to contribute 7 goals and be closing to a 10-goal season as a super sub, having played under 1,500 minutes, having started just 14 matches this season, is phenomenal by Fermín López, to the point where in my time now covering this team, I don't know where he is. Because the first like 3 times I saw Oscar Mingueza under Koeman, coming from the academy, a player that I did not rate. He came up at 22. I had seen him with the Barca B team for a few seasons at that point, and I said, you know, I just thought he was surplus. I thought he wasn't as good as Chumi. At the time, I thought he wasn't as good as Jorge Cuenca at the time, right? I just thought there were other center backs in Barcelona B, because he wasn't. He wasn't even first choice there, because he played well in Clásico when he came up as well, in his first El Clásico.
He scored in the Clásico. He scored.
Exactly. So yeah. Mingueza kind of surprised me, and I had those good vibes. And so I'm hoping for Fermín López, A, by doing this over the course of a whole season, I'm surprised at where he's at. Now going into next season, I don't know where he fits, because he's so exceeded expectations. He was so much of an unknown coming from the academy that, hey, if this is exactly who he is next season and for the next 5 years as a super sub who comes in and he's your other far forward attacker, and the likes of, you know, Guy Fernandez can potentially be a guy who's gonna fight with Gavi and Pedri for a starting role, right? But if Fermín López is just your backup in a way that you hope that Sergio Roberto is now, there is space for him in a 25-man squad. There is space for him in the wage bill because of what he makes, even with the new contract he's signed now to be a first team player. So I'm really excited by Fermín López. And if he can score goals even the way he did, where Ferran Torres, long cross to Lamine Yamal, that's the star, right? Tracks all the attention, puts it back in. Ferran Torres continues his run to the near post, which people are hating on Ferran, but hey, that third goal, I mean, that second goal had a lot to do with him continuing that run to the near post. And then the rebound to Fermín López, who continues to put himself, is in the way that you want a forward to do, in the right place at the right time. I love it for Fermín López.
Just
that was the last goal we had in the game, though.
Quickly on Fermín López, you look at the 7 goals he scored this season, look how big they are as well. You know, against Napoli, against Shakhtar, against Real Madrid. And also his performances against Real Madrid this season have been spectacular. Of course, in Miami, preseason, scored the goal. At home, had a very, very good game. Didn't play in the Super Cup final in January. And then now again at the Bernabeu, gets the goals. He's been very, very pivotal in these classical games this season. Definitely could have been the difference maker if we didn't throw it away ourselves. He's been a very, very big player in big moments this season. So credit where it's due to him. Even the goal he scored against Mallorca as well, to get the 2-2 draw, that was also, you know, huge for us to get that point.
Well, before I forget, 58th minute, Fermín López, Rüdiger collide. Do you think that was a penalty or not?
That one's the one that I think, you know, if it's a 50-50, the referee gives it, you think, okay. If he doesn't give it, it's okay. It's, you know, it's whatever. I don't think there's enough there like the Kumbar C1 or the Lamine Yamal red card, where I will sit here adamantly and say that that decision was incorrect. I think you mentioned a great point about the size comparison as well of Rudiger to Fermin Lopez. I think there was not too much in it. I also think Fermin Lopez, you know, had that bad touch that pushed the ball away to him as well. So I don't think that was a clear and obvious mistake, but definitely could have been a penalty if luck and momentum was on our side.
So now let's go to the 2-2 and the 2-3. Pretty poor defending from Barcelona, particularly Cancelo. I mentioned it in the five headlines that I had been 80-20, bring him back, depending on the right numbers. And now that has changed to 55-45 or 60-40. I still think there's a purpose to him. It makes sense. But his defending this week, just this week, was enough to go, does he give you enough offensively if the number is not exactly what it needs to be? And it does make you question, why didn't Guardiola want him? For, you know, his attacking talent is clear to see. But why didn't Guardiola want him? Why didn't Bayern Munich want him? Like, what is happening? That is it just the falling asleep against elite talent? And by elite talent, I'm saying Real Madrid. I'm not saying Lucas Vasquez, because Lucas Vasquez is not elite talent. He's like, same thing like Sergio Roberto. He's like a good player for a really good team for a long time. Great. But Lucas Vasquez is not like an elite player. And Lucas Vasquez scored his first goal at the Santiago Bernabeu since April 2nd of 2023. It's not a guy you're supposed to lose.
Yeah, I think it all really comes down to Cancelo. I think maybe Koundé could have closed down the cross that came in for the Vasquez goal where he got done, where Cancelo got done from behind. Where I stand on Cancelo is where I've always stood. I think the club made the decision way before back in, you know, the new year to sign him. I think, you know, we talked about the fullback market being little to nothing at this point, that Barcelona, to be honest, don't really have too much leverage. I think if the price is right, you get him on loan with a buy option, or you spend maybe around 20 million euros for him as a package, and you pay that in installments. Again, if it's a good deal, I think we can all agree we can sign him. I'm personally on the, I would say I'm still on the 80-20 side, because takeaway this week, he's been our second best player of the season in terms of consistency, in terms of performance levels as well, in big moments as well this season. He's turned up a lot. You look at the Champions League game against Porto, the Napoli game as well. So he's had his moments this season, and now he's, I think, on a bit of a downward spiral in terms of his form as well. But he's just an elite fullback, both at right back and at left back as well. But I say he's much more comfortable at right back. He's playing left back because of Baldi's injury, essentially. But he has been playing at left back a lot this season as well. But I think he's a player that you still scoop up, especially if the price is right. Of course, if Man City walk in and demand, apparently they wanted 40 million, 50 million for him, I'd definitely walk from that. But if the price is right, the deal is beneficial for all parties, Cancelo, Man City, and Barcelona, I would give the green light.
Yeah, there's also that big domino effect that I've been talking about for weeks and months now, about if Araujo is sold for some reason, then Koundé will likely switch over to center back, because Christensen cannot be, he's just not healthy enough as a player to be trusted all season long as the first choice center back option. And you also don't know, if you can't bring in a pivot, then Christensen, that experiment with him as a pivot might have to continue. So now Koundé moves over, but Koundé has been so good at right back, and all those early questions about him being unhappy, his level since Xavi said he was leaving and Koundé has come back healthy, he has been exceptional. Really, really, really special. And
remember,
I
that first 2 months of the season, Koundé at center back, when it was Cancelo right back, he was the best center back in the world on form. Then he got that big injury against Granada away that left him out for about a month and a half, and took him out a month and a half after coming back from that month and a half to get back his form and get back his, you know, momentum as well. So I think overall Koundé has had an absolutely exceptional season.
I agree. Koundé has been huge for Barcelona, even though defensively, yes, they weren't what they were last year, but he has been better than he was. And that continuity with Lamine Yamal, as we referenced to El Clasico yesterday, has gotten better and better. And the best we've seen of Lamine Yamal is when Koundé is making the right decisions and continuing to find him, cutting inside and then finding him in space out wide in 1v1 situations and releasing the ball. And these are all nuanced things to get the timing down to release the ball when to basically give your winger the opportunity to not be double teamed so quickly, because we saw this with Dembélé through the years a lot. We can say names, right? Like Semedo. Like I want to mention names that when they would come inside, they wouldn't release the ball to Dembélé. They would release it either too early, the help or the double team would come to him and meet him before he had the opportunity to get around to the goal line, or they would release it too late, and now he's one touch, and you know how Dembélé is on his first touch. He doesn't know where it's going to be when it gets to him. So right on that first touch, it would be too late, and now his first touch takes him right into a defender or right into a crowd of people. And you'd have that breakdown with the winger situation, but Koundé's spacing and timing with Lamine Yamal has gotten better and better. I mean, I even go back to Serginho Dest and Dembélé. A few times I saw that when I'm like, both these guys are really good on the ball, and in theory, they're fast. This should work, but this is an absolute calamity of timing, and it's just a complete mess. But Lamine Yamal and Koundé completely understand their positions. They understand what their job is, their function, and I would love to have that back again next season. And then you have choices to make. And this is a funny thing, because as we transitioned into talking about Xavi's continuity, I'm going to be a bit more positive, and you can talk. I'd love to hear you talk more about the 1v1 that you were referencing on your latest show. And you had a video out earlier today, even I think, right, about the 1v1 situation. Mm-hmm. And so when talking about the financial situation at the fullback and back line in particular, Barcelona have a number to, they'll say decisions, but they can make the right decision here between hopefully Balde coming back. You have Alex Valle returning on loan. You have the idea of Cancelo. Are you going to bring him back on loan? Are you going to have to find a way to pay your installments next year and buy him this year? Is Araujo going to be sold? Koundé, I mean, is he the option to be sold? Who knows about that? Inigo Martinez, is he going to continue on? Marcus Alonso, seems like he's going to be gone. And then you also have Julian Araujo, in theory, coming back on loan. Where's Hector Fort, and how much are you going to trust him in the first team next season? Or is he going to be a Barca Athletic regular and play less in the first team this season than he did last year? How's that going to go in his next contract negotiations, right, for his extensions, and how's that going to affect that? So there's a lot of questions to be asked, and you could get all of those wrong, and now your back line is a complete mess. Or you can get all of those right. So I'm going to put you on the spot here early. If you're the Barcelona board and Deco, how are you having those chess pieces of what you know right now, this point in the season?
So what I would personally do is that for right back, I would have as the set two, Cancelo and Julian Araujo. And at left back, I would have Alejandro Balde and either Alex Valle, Hector Ford, Sergio Cardona. You can pick one out of the three. I think personally, you pick one of Alex Valle, Sergio Cardona being the first team, and you have Hector Ford in the B team, and he's bouncing out, probably train with the first team week in, week out, and maybe get his opportunity as well of injuries and stuff, which are inevitable, do happen. At center back, I would have the best four, you could say. I would have Koundé, Christensen, Araujo, and Cubarsí, and I also would have Mikel Fay there as well. And the rest, I would bid off. So to get rid of Alonso, Inigo, even the people coming back from loan, Eric Garcia, Clement Longley, I wouldn't use a buy option to bring back Xavi Riyad either. I think with Barcelona, with the amount of games we play as well, I think having five center backs is okay. I think with Calfe, you just need to have that left foot option. That's one of the huge reasons why I'd keep him. You cannot go into a season with four right footed center backs. That is beyond suicide, especially if Xavi stays as a manager.
We had that point on Faye too, that this week, that news, again, more of the smoke, there's fire, that it sounds from Faye's camp like either he's going to get a spot in the first team next season, or his agent wants to take one of those offers for between 10 to 20 million that are coming in for him. So there are teams that are saying, hey, if he's going to start every week, week in and week out, the focus errors that he makes with the Barça Athletic, which he does, he makes some mental errors or some focus lapses that occur, which is to be expected in a player playing in his first actual full professional season. I want to remind everybody of that. It was the 6 months in the second division in Croatia, and now this is actually his first season playing full professional football, and it's taking place in the third division in Spain. So there are some mental lapses, but the raw tools, obviously, and he actually not even raw tools, but some of the advanced tools. He plays some really good balls to that left foot, to your point. That left foot is not just a dead foot. Like, he's got a good left foot. He puts himself in good scoring positions. He's pretty good in the air, and he's only going to get better as he continues to refine his game and get older. He's, what, 20 years old now? And I also think in terms of that focus, that is something that with experience is going to be shored up as well. Like, not everyone can be Pau Cubarsí, who seemingly has never had a lapse in focus. So Faye, that will come along with experience. And there are going to be teams saying, hey, for 20 million, we will just insert you into our starting lineup and you can play potentially Europa League sides. And that is going to be tough for agents and Faye, the player, to say no to. So Barcelona are going to have to promise him stuff up front that, hey, you're going to be in the first team. And that means that Alonso and Inigo Martinez and maybe even Christensen, but I mean, is Christensen your pivot for you, right? How's that going to work out?
I think Christensen will be playing more so as a pivot next season. Whether we bring someone in, he'll provide that coverage and competition. He'll probably be a utility player between center back and the pivot position. But with Mikel Fay, I think if Barcelona do end up selling him, they'll definitely include a buyback option just to see how he does. Maybe if he does explode, then we need a center back in the future. He can definitely come in. But I more so see Araujo, Cubarsí, Mikel Fay, and Koundé as the four center backs that we'll be balancing it out. And I think, you know, you have to remember that Kubarsky is probably going to be with Spain at the Euros and the Olympics this summer as well. So that's probably going to be him out for the first month of the season. He won't play, of course, both tournaments to the full expectation, probably be on the bench of the Euros and start at the Olympic week in, week out. So you want to have those options there. Again, look at our injury records. There's not been a season where we've not had a total injury crisis. Yes, sometimes we benefit from the injury crisis. We see players come about, like a Kubarsky, like a Lamine Yamal, like a Fermín López as well. But you don't want to suffer through that. So that's why I think even if you want to sacrifice a natural left-back coverage for Balde, which I think he needs, though. He needs that coverage. He needs that kind of competition. That's what he lacked a lot this season, because he knew that he could start week in, week out. Like, if I have a bad game, ain't no way Marcus Alonso starting ahead of me. And trust me, there is no way Alonso would start ahead of Alejandro Balde. So I think that's what he missed. We saw him, the best of him, last season still. I'm thinking of playing ahead. But last season, because he had that competition with Jordi Alba, because you know that, okay, if I don't play well, Jordi Alba will come in, he can definitely take my spot from me. So I think the fullback issue is where the question mark comes in. Again, Koundé won't be happy sitting on the bench consistently, but he's so good, I think you have to play him. I think we might see Kubarsky be on the bench for that first month of the season. We'll see maybe Araujo and Koundé starting center back, Cancelo right back, Balde left back. So basically the back five that we had at the beginning of the season, this season, starting the season following that, and you have Mikhailovic, Kubarsky on the bench, Julian Araujo, Alex Valle, that will be big assets to you come, you know, November, December, January time, where you're playing basically every other day at that point.
That's a really good point, because, and I really like that you said that about Kubarsky, that a reminder that I don't want to forget this is that Kubarsky and Lamine Yamal, I now on talent alone and their function in the team, especially as Xavi is still manager, I put them in, hey, you need to win this match. They're in the starting 11 for me. They've been that good. They've been that essential. They've been that important to this team, especially over the last 2 months. But to your point, they have, I don't want to forget this, have played way too many minutes this season, to the point where every time I see Gabi, I go, oh yeah, take Lamine Yamal off the field. Oh yeah, take Kubarsky off the field. Get those guys off the field, and then every time you see Pedri, and Pedri does something well, I go, there's a reason why we can't see this all the time, because you know who Pedri is, and I will defend that child until he's no longer a child. I guess he's now a legal adult, but I will defend him until my dying day, because a healthy, fit Pedri, now, he has missed a lot of time, and that has probably hurt his development, but even the player that he is now, that he was when he was 16, who, like Ansu Fati, he may never get back to. Like, Pedri has maybe had that many injuries that makes you question his future at the club, but I do not, because if the guy can stay healthy, he's phenomenal, and I love what he does for you, his ball retention, and you pair him with a top-level pivot who can also control a game, and you're going to see the quote-unquote Barca way of playing a game in a midfield with Pedri and Gabi and a pivot. Like, there is a pathway forward to play a way that is going to support Kubarsky and Kubart Lamine Yamal, and Kules will be crying again. Like, those are the things I dream about. But to your point, Kubarsky and Lamine Yamal have already played way too many minutes, and that's why if you can keep Rafinha, you keep Rafinha, because you still need him. You still need somebody on the right wing. If not, then maybe Cancelo needs to play right wing. If you have to sell Rafinha for some kind of big sale reason and you keep Cancelo, then Cancelo, put him at right wing, and then you figure out your left back situation with all, you know, the myriad of players that are possible there, especially if you have Koundé continue on with right back, because again, that's been so good, I'd almost be worried to change that for next year if you have the exact same personnel, which Xavi might have the exact same personnel. He might not, because he might or may or not. I'm so confused. I'm, as you asked me on your feed, I have, or stream, I have no answer to this, because now in the last 24 hours, this idea that Xavi is now closer to continuing, it doesn't make any sense to me. You lose two gigantic matches. The last time you did a little bit of losing, the Entorno and the pressure got to be too much, so you decide to step aside. The team starts to play really well. People are saying, hey, we want you back. And then you spend 2 months in press conferences saying, I have no plans on coming back. I left for these reasons. The Entorno, the pressure, the intensity, da-da-da-da-da. And now, all of a sudden, there's a meeting on Wednesday, and it seems like now he's more likely to come back because the club that he loves so dearly only has Rafa Márquez as an option. And I think Xavi himself can look in the mirror and say, Xavi, you might still be a better option this season than Rafa Márquez. Because you still actually, Xavi, have more first team experience than Rafa Márquez. And maybe things behind the scene, they're not going to be able to get their guy until at least 2025. And now they're asking Xavi, hey, you know, let's test how much you love this club. Because they did the same thing to Johan Cruyff even. And Cruyff was like, I love you guys, but also I'm Johan Cruyff. And he had a bit more ego than Xavi did. And Johan Cruyff called the shots a little bit more. But then he also didn't, because his hubris got him 4-0 at AC Milan. And that's the way history goes. So I think Xavi, part of him wants to avoid, you know, a 4-0 somewhere, anywhere, right? And avoid that kind of situation. Because even the 4-1 PSG, that was a red card. And I don't know, you seem to defend Xavi and say a lot of times that fans have said this is all Xavi's fault. You've said no, like the players made individual mistakes at times, and you know, you'd stick with Xavi.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m., and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.
I think the only big mistake I can think that Xavi's made this season off the top of my head was how he set up in that first half an hour in the Spanish Super Cup final, where he basically, that was just suicide, playing a high line against Vinicius and Rodrigo. They had so much space in behind and they punished us. That was the Xavi mistake. If you look at all the lineups that we've talked about for all the games this season, the big selections for the big games this season, how he's tactically set us up, there's been no problems. If you look at the PSG game, a team that we know we plan to have, that Xavi planned to have, won the game 3-2 in 90 minutes, 11v11. And the exact same game plan he used in the second leg, we were doing well, we were up 1-0, and then one individual mistake, and the whole entire tie flips on his head. Like you mentioned, there's no suitable replacement to bring in Xavi. I think if Xavi was to leave, we need someone to come in with experience. Rafa Marquez is far from that. Great manager. I think he's definitely doing well with Barça Athletic 100%, but I don't think he's ready for the first team yet. And, you know, you look at the other replacements out there, your Hansi Flick, your Thomas Tuchels, your De Zerbis. They're just not enough. They're just not going to cut it. I'd rather stick with Xavi for one more season. I think, again, no one that's voice matters wanted Xavi to leave whatsoever. I've never said Xavi out. I've been Xavi in this whole entire time. I know some people have been Xavi out. I don't know why, but that's their opinion. Fair enough to them. But the board never considered second Xavi whatsoever. Even in that month of January when we were, you know, struggling and losing the Super Cup final, getting knocked out of the Copa del Rey, never were the board considering sacking Xavi whatsoever. They're like, okay, yeah, we're going through a struggle right now, but let's wait and see how things turn out. Because they rushed to conclusions. The reason why Xavi left was because the whole entire media turned against him. Whether that is a good thing or a bad thing, did they really turn against him, like, to say that he should leave? No, but they were criticizing him. They're, you know, it was a mental strain, and that's why he announced that he was leaving, to kind of give that mental strain and, you know, open up everything, because now no one can say that, oh, Xavi should leave or Xavi shouldn't leave. So that's, you know, of course, improved the results. We went on an unbeaten run until PSG. I think it was, what, 10 wins and a 1 draw? Something like that. So I think, again, there's no one better out there to lead this project forward than Xavi, in my opinion. It is his project, and hopefully if he gets back with the players that he does get, things can change. If you look at the last summer transfer window again, he got his 7th choice pivot. He got the 2 Joao's, 2 hours to go on the final deadline day when the season has already been over 30 games into La Liga season, and of course preseason well and truly already done. Both those players came in not fit. He of course got Inigo, who was always going to be a rotational player as a free agent in January, and of course Gundogan was the big signing on a free transfer who came in around mid-June and did of course participate in preseason. So you could say apart from Gundogan, really Xavi got no one else that he wanted. Of course, the last summer transfer window, the one where we activated all the economic levers, the old Xavi's players, all the players that he asked for, look, they came in, they had a good preseason. We had, you know, a ropey start, but then, of course, ended up winning the double, which, you know, overall was a success. So I do back Xavi. I think he's the right manager for the foreseeable future. Of course, beyond his current contract, we have to assess that next season. If you give him what he wants this summer and he comes in and does the same thing, then you can start maybe criticizing him and pointing fingers at him. But I don't think that will happen. I think if you give him what he wants, he can definitely turn the situation around.
Yeah, I'll repeat again that 2025-26 feels like a big season. And I know it seems like the last few years you've been kicking the can down the road. But what's true is that the Camp Nou in November, December, hopefully, depending on construction, is supposed to open up. So revenue is going to come in, hopefully, back in bigger numbers. And in theory, the club is going to be able to spend a bit more, having not spent in this interim period. So now, as they're trying to figure out FFP, and all those young players that we just talked about are going to be older as well. I mean, and they're in theory going to be entering not even their primes, they're still in their early 20s and all that stuff. So they're going to be better, have more experience, hopefully be healthy and all those things. So in theory, this project is still very much at its beginning, and you had to go through a little bit of a negative time, and Messi left, which is really it's a trauma for the club. Like losing the greatest player of all time is a trauma for the club. And it's taken multiple seasons to even recover from that idea, because we saw the last few seasons about the reliance on Messi game in and game out and what that did to the club in the long run. And now it seems like you've got a generation of talent that is prepared to step into his stead with a proper manager to guide that along. And do I think that Xavi is going to be hosting a Champions League? Maybe not. Maybe he isn't that manager, but to your point, I've never turned on Xavi, because I think he gets so much right at the start of games, and the response he gets from Lamine Yamal and Kubarsi and the young talent, Hector Fort. I can't think of young players that really struggle. I'd love to see what Vitor Roque looks like next season with a full preseason with Barcelona, with Xavi and all that stuff. Cause I don't buy that stuff that Xavi is like, doesn't back him and doesn't like him and all that stuff. I would continue on if Xavi wants to continue on, if that's where his heart lies. And I would kind of push this a whole nother year and say, all right, 2025-26, is Klopp available, right? And what kind of money is going to be able to be spent? Where's the project at that point? Because I think even if Xavi were to leave this summer, I'd have a hard time analyzing his time in charge or even this year. Because when I look at the squads, I'm hoping that in the future, you look at back to the 25-man squads. And this year, there was only now 22 registered because of Fermín López and Vitor Roque, but you didn't even have a full 25-man squad that's eligible to be registered in the Liga, and you're that much relying on your academy players. I mean, Lamine Yamal obviously was a 25, and so was Kubarsi, but they can't be registered properly in the first team because of their contracts, their youth contracts. So when you look at the squads, I may look back and say, the fact that he did win the Liga the one season, and then he won the Spanish Super Cup in the same season, then the following season, where the expectations were just get out of the group stage of the Champions League and definitely make top four, and you wind up hopefully finishing second in the Liga and the quarterfinal, where you were up in the quarterfinal. It's to your point, it's how it happened makes that quarterfinal against PSG so disappointing. But the goal always was the quarterfinal, and they didn't get blown off the field. They did because of a red card, because they went down a man, and Kylian Mbappe and Dembele, and it all became inevitable. But Barcelona, the disappointment and heartbreak is because they probably could have made the semifinal against Dortmund, and now are you in the final of the Champions League? And who would have thought that with Xavi? And how does that all change the narrative? So I think it's even a bit too quick. You know, I know people are like, the season's over. It's not yet over, though, because I haven't fully gotten to the conclusion of how I judge this season at all. Do you have any ideas on how you would judge it in the macro sense, or Xavi's tenure? Indeed, he does decide to leave on Wednesday, which already seems like he's not going to for some reason.
Mm-hmm. I would say this, if you compare the squad that we had at the end of last season to right now, it's nothing short of a downgrade, 100%. Even if you compare the squad going into last season when we won the double to the squad that we had at the beginning of the season, there's been a downgrade. You look at the personnel, you look at the age as well, look at what the injuries that we suffered to Gavi this season at Balde. It's been a real struggle for Xavi. Now, in terms of how I judge the season, I think overall, a trophy of the season, no matter what, is a failure, in my opinion. We've now gone trophyless in two of the past three seasons, which I never thought I would see in my life since the Tita Villanova. What was it? Tata Martino, when he went trophyless, and even then he still won the Super Cup. The issue with this season has been that not only did we lose those trophies, but we kind of gave them away. I think I was very confident we're going to win this league title, especially with Real Madrid not really investing too much in their attacking front. I think they only signed Bellingham, and then they signed Joselu, and that was pretty much it. They brought back Ferran Garcia on a loan. I'm thinking they've made no improvements. We've kind of stayed the same. We should be winning this league title. And I think throughout the course of the season, yes, they've only lost one game in Real Madrid this season in the league, credit to them. But I think a lot of times this season, we threw it away. There were a lot of moments where we won these two games, we would have been top. And it's just, you know, how the feeling of the season went. I would say overall it's been a failure. Yes, you mentioned the point that, yes, we competed for La Liga for a bit. We got to the quarterfinals and we lost in the quarterfinals of the Copa del Rey, then the final of the Super Cup. So we kind of just got to the bare minimum and then crumbled a lot this season. But I would say personally, overall, it's been a failure. Because at the end of the day, you win to play trophies. If you don't win any, I think it's a failure.
Yeah, it's interesting because I definitely hear you and agree with your point that the season as a whole might be a failure, but Xavi might have not been a failure in this season based on the expectations put on him, which is odd that like the team and the club have a different expectation and have a different measure of failure than the manager himself, which, yeah, I think I'm going to have to keep thinking on this. And I think the silence that would take and the smell that would, as I'm trying to, you know, the gears are grinding and all that stuff. So I'm going to let you go. And I want you to, before you go, just quickly, what do you have coming up, I guess? Because can you give a pitch on why people should continue to follow you and follow me for the rest of this season and what they have to look forward to with our content?
We're in it for the vibes now. We got nothing to play for. We're just in it for hopefully good results, good football, and just to get back to some happiness going into summer. Reason why to follow me, because there's going to be a lot of things to be talked about over the next month. We have a lot of key decisions to make, not only for the managerial position, but also the future of loan players as well that are coming in and coming out of Barcelona when we return to the 1-1 rule and have, you know, an even playing field the summer transfer window. So lots to discuss, lots of things to happen. Of course, the meeting's going to be happening on Wednesday, so probably Wednesday afternoon, evening. We're going to get a decision from the media that will come out on what Xavi and the board have decided. So still a lot to look forward to this season. And of course, summer transfer window is going to be absolutely all over the place, as it is normally for Barcelona.
Yeah, even if nothing happens, it's going to be all over the place. That's a promise. That's a guarantee. But yeah, as we go, I want to thank my Patreons. As always, you're the reason this show exists. You can follow both of us on the YouTube channel, sure, and give me a good rating on the podcast apps. Always helpful to Barcelona podcast. Then Twitter and Instagram, also find me there. Close Facebook group, Discord. That's how you have the community. That's how you get involved. Most importantly, though, thanks so much for listening to the Barcelona podcast, to Barca Boy, to everybody in these Barcelona content creators. It's been rough, but if you've been here long enough, you know that whenever there are valleys, there are mountaintops to reach again. So the climb continues on for next season, and it begins today. So until next time, we'll talk to you soon. Sports Barca.